forest. And if you go to Hebron, where Issa lives,
Amira,
then it is the...
We're going to have to leave it there, but I thank you both for being with us. Amira Haas, Haaretz correspondent, and Issa Amra.
You are listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI, 90.3 FM in Minneapolis and around the world at kfai.org. The community's true voice.
The viewpoints expressed in this program are the opinions of the people expressing them, and not necessarily those of Fresh Air Incorporated, its staff, or its board of directors.
As Native people, we talk about seven generations. So what we do now is going to affect our seven generations down the road. And that's something I think about constantly in my work. And in that moment, I saw that what my actions did affected the next generation right after me.
Anin, welcome to Native Lights, where Indigenous voices shine. I'm your host, Cole Primo.
And I'm your other host, Leah Lem. Miigwech for joining us. Native Lights is at its core a place for Native folks to tell their stories. Every week, we have great conversations with guests from a bunch of different backgrounds, and we learn about their gifts and how they share those gifts with their community, and it all centers around the big point of purpose in our lives, and I can't wait to continue amplifying Native voices today. I'm really excited for our conversation today. We actually have two guests today. Not one, but two guests. So we're going to switch it up a little bit and talk about some important work being done at the American Indian Community Housing Organization in Duluth, and that's also known as ACO. ACO is expanding their culturally responsive domestic violence shelter called Dabanuigan to help more victims and survivors of domestic and sexual violence in their community. And also, just FYI, ACO is having a concert fundraiser in April in partnership with the Ordean Foundation. All money raised will go toward the Dabanuigan shelter expansion. We'll talk a little bit about that, but we will be talking to Sasheen Goslin and Deanna Rader. Sasheen Goslin is a Prairie Band Potawatomi, Red Cliff, Ojibwe, and Kickapoo community member or citizen, and is the Indigenous Health Coordinator at ACO, serving the Indigenous and BIPOC community in Duluth. So that's pretty cool. And then Deanna Rader serves as the legal advocate for Dabanuigan Domestic Violence Shelter at ACO in Duluth. Deanna is also in the process of earning her JD or Juris Doctorate at Mitchell Hamlin School of Law. So two great guests working for our communities, working for the Indigenous BIPOC community in Duluth. So really incredible work. And yeah, so we'll get to hear about that shelter expansion, and then we'll hear a little bit about the upcoming fundraiser.
Bonjour to the both of you. Could we just start out by getting some introductions, please? Maybe let's start out with Sasheen.
Anin, Sasheen Ndijinikab, Nisquabakandan Dujba. My name is Sasheen Goslin. I come from the place with Red Cliffs, Red Cliff, Wisconsin. I am the Indigenous Health Coordinator at ACO.
Good afternoon. My name is Deanna Rader, and I am the Domestic Violence Legal Advocate at Dabanuigan Domestic Violence Shelter.
Thank you both so much for that. And can you tell us a bit about the Dabanuigan Domestic Violence Shelter? Kind of what is it and where does it stand today? Deanna, would you like to kick us off with that?
So first off, so I know with Dabanuigan, it's Anishinaabe Owen for a place where you are safe, comforted, and sheltered. And when we take those words, when we take what that means, it's really to create a space for those who are fleeing domestic violence and creating an environment where we can meet them where they're at, whatever that may be, whether it's respite or to flee from violence. It's really just trying to give them create a space where they can feel safe. And right now, as a result of COVID, we had to go to a remote site where it wasn't, where we weren't there on site with them. But we just recently were able to open up our temporary shelter. And which is like a home setting. And when we were building and putting that temporary shelter together, the goal was to make it feel like a home, not just another institution, not just another place, but a home feeling. Because it is it's meant to be a place of healing. While there's like a lot of important goal setting, finding housing, or relocating, in the interim, outside of those business hours, it's meant to be a home. And so when our temporary shelter was being developed, we were being very intentional with how we were building it, what was being set where, how can we make people feel welcomed? And then also, how can we make sure it's culturally appropriate? Like, how can we make sure we have a sense of belonging? With that being said, that being our temporary shelter, I know like long term, our goal is to have our bigger shelter, which is a work in progress. But in the meantime, I'm really excited that we have that home feeling again.
Sasheen, do you have anything to add to that? As a community member in Duluth, as someone who works in ACO, what are your general thoughts on the domestic violence shelter?
Deanna is our shelter guru. out of the both of us, she knows Dabanugan very, very well. And that's kind of what's incredible, that what makes our team is that we have specialties in different areas. So I'm a fairly new resident to the Duluth area. I've been here probably about a year and a half. But really over the last year is when I've inserted myself into this community. And it's very clear that we need these services. Dabanugan plays an essential role into the healing of our communities. There's not a lot of shelters out there. They're full a lot of the times. And that says a lot what we need to bring into this community. And that's like a driving factor behind not just the goals of Dabanugan or their mission, but moving forward. How are we going to address the issues around domestic violence? What can we do? What Dabanugan does is inserts our cultural values into their mission. And we are the only domestic violence shelter that I know of in the area that is specifically working on something like that, which is pretty incredible considering how big our Native population is in this area. We are in the treaty area of 1854. We have several reservations within an hour distance around our area. A lot of people use our services, and I think it's great. It's a true blessing that we're able to provide services as a full organization of ACO, so American Indian Community Housing Organization, but also Dabanugan Domestic Violence.
You're listening to Native Lights, Where Indigenous Voices Shine. Native Lights is produced by Minnesota Native News and Ampers with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Today we're speaking with Sasheen Goslin and Deanna Rader, who both work at the American Indian Community Housing Organization, and we're taking time today to focus on ACO's culturally responsive domestic violence shelter expansion. Sasheen, maybe while we're on you, can you talk a bit about your role at ACO and how you got into that role and why it's important to you?
It's pretty crazy how I ended up at ACO. So I don't believe in coincidences. I believe in fate. And I think I was meant to be in this position for a reason and do the work that I do. So over the course of the last 6 years, I would say I worked all around Indian country in different settings, including like higher education, natural resources. And now I work in Indigenous health. And all of those contribute to the work I do now. So like I said, I've been at ACO for a year now, working on our health initiatives, specifically around COVID. Specifically, what I'm doing is a lot of educational outreach. I'm out in the community a lot, talking about not just how to keep yourself safe from COVID, but we are one of the biggest providers of COVID vaccinations in the Duluth area right now, which is very cool. Over the last year, we've vaccinated close to 600 people just at our location here in Duluth. We have a health equity initiative that's pretty incredible. And I really do believe that we'll move mountains with this initiative and what we define as Indigenous health. And that will be the track that, you know, we move forward on. And it's interesting how I got involved with Dabanugan. So we're a small organization. We have less than 30 employees. And the idea of the fundraiser or, you know, plans of moving forward, how this came from this like little speck of an idea, and it just blew up. And we put together this incredible team of 6 people on it. We all have different roles that we do here, all different aspects, not just the shelter, but our cultural resources. Ivy gets a shout out for that. And then also on the health side. And it's like the epitome of what like great teamwork is. We really highlight each other. And out of that is going to come this incredible event that not just benefits our organization, but this entire community. Like, this shelter is going to have, I can't like accentuate this enough, how amazing that this will be, and that we'll be able to have it here and to provide this vital resource here to this community.
I wanted to ask a similar question to Deanna, and just, you know, how you got into your role at ACO.
I feel like, Sasheen, you and I, this is why we go really well together. It's very similar because I do believe in fate. I do believe like opportunities, like it just, if it's meant to be, it's meant to be. And so I went to my undergrad at DePauw University in Greencastle, Indiana. I was actually born and raised in Las Vegas. And when I came to finding what college I wanted to go to, it was like just a very random, very random. My best friend growing up, her last name was DePauw. And I was like, I'm going to apply to school. I don't know what it is, but I'm going to take a chance. So I ended up going there. I got my degree in political science and anthropology. And when it came time to graduating, I still had no idea what I would do. I went to my advisor and I said, I don't know what to do, but I know I want to work with the community. I don't want to be like a 9-to-5 job, like behind the desk necessarily, like same story, different day. I wanted to be like, I just want to do something like out there. What's that job title? My advisor had no idea what that was. So I was like, okay, well, on to the next step. So I graduated. After I went back home to Las Vegas to be with my mom. And unfortunately, part of that was my mom was currently in a domestic violence relationship. And so it was, and that was actually what I had a lot of growing up in, was not knowing then what I know now was domestic violence, and seeing a lot of unhealthy relationships with my mom. And it finally got to a point with that particular relationship, I had to call my family, and it was like 2 a.m. and I said, help me. I need to get out of here. I didn't feel safe. My aunt actually bought my plane ticket back out to Wisconsin. And so I relocated back in 2016 after still having no idea what to do. I had left my animals behind. I left pretty much almost everything behind, except that I brought with me 2 suitcases. And that was really hard, leaving my mom, because I think that was one of the biggest things, knowing that she was still in that situation. But I knew for my own mental health, my own sanity and safety, I had to get out of there. So I relocated to be with my grandma, my family, which I'm really fortunate, because I know that's not the circumstances for everyone. Oftentimes people are leaving and going, fleeing and going into the unknown. So I ended up working a couple of jobs, and then finally, in one of those jobs, when I was a hostess at, a social worker was just like, what do you want to do? And I was like, I just gave that same description. And she was like, well, what about this a family advocate position? And I was like, I have no idea what that does. And so I ended up applying. I didn't get it, but they offered me a different role as a community advocate, where I'd work with families who are involved with CPS and CHIPS and where ICWA is involved. And I got to work with families on housing. Domestic violence was a component of it, and helping families get reunified with their kiddos. And that was kind of my first like introduction into a lot of learning about homelessness, really getting a good understanding of what domestic violence is, systems barriers, a lot about historical trauma, generational trauma. Even I think that was my first exposure to learning about boarding schools. And here I am, like, I think at 22 at this point, and I'm just now learning about such a big, big piece of history that somehow got missed along the ways of my education system. But another topic for another day, I know. And that being said, one of the families I worked with, I was met with the previous legal advocate for Adopt a Newigan. And when my grant ended for that, for my community advocate, she was like, well, are you still interested in this? And I said, I very much am, like this little fire passion that kind of developed. And so she was also attending law school at that time. And so as she was transitioning out, she got me into this. And that was almost 5 years ago. So this year will be my fifth year at ACO. And I haven't, what was meant to be a very temporary situation in Superior ended up being a permanent thing. And I'm glad. And I think when we cross paths with people, I think that can really, it can just open up so many doors. And I think the people I cross paths with really helped put me on the path of finding what my passion was. So I think even though what I grew up in, I didn't know what that was. I didn't have a name for it. Or, I mean, I know a name existed, but as a child, I didn't know. It just put a lot into perspective. And I'm really grateful that I know and have a good understanding of domestic violence. And that's kind of want to put that back now into the community and working with families, victims, survivors.
Thank you so much, Deanna, for sharing your story. I think that's so important. Like, that experience is just... I wouldn't wish that on you, but I appreciate that you share that and have that perspective.
And I had a question I wanted to open up to both of you. Maybe we start with Sasheen, but just are there some experiences or stories working at ACO that, you know, that you can share that stick with you and kind of drive your passion and work within the community?
I actually just had a moment the other day. I've been doing some outreach around youth. I went to a school district 2.5 hours from here to do outreach and posted a couple pictures on social media, you know, showing what I was doing, that I was excited about it. And one of our youth here has me on Facebook and made a comment and said, can you come to our school district next? And like that moment right there, like made me realize several different things. Like our youth are watching us. They're watching our moves. They're watching what we do, the impact that we make. And that made me so excited to keep doing what I'm doing because we're making a difference. And like I always feel like I have a light bulb going off on my head. And it's just like it makes me excited for our future as Native people, as an organization, to see that like our excitement for these things though is like wearing off or like going on other people for their excitement. Like what that you said meant that he's proud to be a part of this organization or to associate with our organization and wants us to represent like what we do at his school, to come in there to do that at his school. And that is so exciting because, you know, 50 years ago, 40 years ago, that wasn't the case. And like thinking about like the evolution of Native peoples, like what has happened during like colonial times is absolutely devastating. And we are still picking ourselves up from that daily. And as Native people, we talk about 7 generations. So what we do now is going to affect our 7 generations down the road. And that's something I think about constantly in my work. What I do now is going to affect that 7 generations now. And in that moment, I saw that what my actions did affected the next generation right after me, directly right after me. And it was just, I'm still like, excited and about that moment. I texted several different people that sent that screenshot, and it's like I am absolutely excited about this. Like this one little comment just probably made my entire year. It just it blew the door wide open of what we are capable of, and it's exciting to see that next generation seeing that because they're able to follow right behind us.
How about you, Deanna? What's an experience that you'd like to share?
Mine was recent, also more so in the summer, but I was meeting with working with a family, and the mom texted me, someone who I've been able to work with for a while, texted me, "Do you know anything about the backpack drive?" And I said the usual resources of what I know. And then when I looked into it, I saw one of the backpack drives I referred her to, it was canceled. And I was like, oh no, like, what can I do? And Sashine mentioned earlier about like, what started out as like a little idea has prospered. And that is what I love about ACO so much. It's like, you can start with an idea and the amount of support you get into it. And so I said, I was thinking to myself, well, why don't we have a backpack drive? And I think we had like 3 weeks until school started. And so I was like, I don't know how, but I'm going to figure it out. And so then I went to my director and I said, I'm going to make this happen. How much do you think we need to raise? And she said, about maybe a little over $7,000. So I was like, all right. So I put a call to action letter and everything. I sent it out. Long story short, out of all of that, we were able to have a successful backpack drive. We distributed, I think, over 200 backpacks. And we raised close to $10,000. And I actually went back to the family. I was like, you inspired this. Like, it's the people I work with who inspire ideas from me. And I think by being a part of ACO too, encourages those ideas. And when we got to do the backpack drive, I think seeing that like come to fruition, like, oh, you saw, we had families lining up, and I think all the backpacks were gone within 5 minutes. And also I what was great about that too, it's like, it was like a no questions asked, like, come, if you need it, you need it. And that's why I also, and that was partially inspired too by our food distribution. When we give out food boxes, we didn't ask why you needed or how much. We just gave it because there's a need for it. Like, and I always think, like, if we have the resources, share it. Why hold it? Like, that I don't need it any more than anyone else. So it's like, if we have it, then I think about giving it. So that is what my favorite moment.
That's the theme. Sharing our gifts, sharing our resources. You know, something I have, I can share with you. Something you have, you can share with me. And I tell you, Natives and supporting one another when it's like, when there's a call to action and there's a trusted organization, we're there for it. It's really beautiful, and you know, just one of my favorite things to see.
You're listening to Native Lights, where Indigenous voices shine. Native Lights is produced by Minnesota Native News and AMPRS with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Today, we're speaking with Sashine Gosselin and Deanna Rader, who both work at the American Indian Community Housing Organization, also known as ACO, and we're taking a time today to focus on the organization's culturally responsive domestic violence shelter expansion.
Let's pivot a little bit to the fundraiser for the expansion of the domestic violence shelter. And while we're here, maybe Deanna, what's the next phase that you're hoping to expand into with the shelter?
So by a lot of what we've been promoting with this concert is the need for our shelter expansion is about $600,000. And with that expansion, that's going to be going towards our brand new shelter, which would be a 24-bed shelter, which is amazing because even before the pandemic, we were at a 10-bed. So we would be increasing more than 50%. With the 24-bed shelter, and we'll be able to expand it to those fleeing. So it's not because we serve also, in addition to domestic violence, we serve those who are fleeing from sexual violence and also trafficking. And the reality is, in what we put into our call to action for what's promoting our fundraisers, the fact of in our capacity that we currently have, we were able to serve about 500 individuals, but yet of those 500 we serve, 200 were about turned away. And that is because of lack of space. And by having to turn away, I mean, we don't know the full circumstances of what happens after someone's turned away, but just not being able to meet those needs it can be very unsatisfying and it's very sad because there is, and what Sashine was mentioning earlier is there's a need. And when ACO was developed back in 1993, it was in a response to a crisis. Dobbinigan was one of the first programs, or the first program that started that got ACO off the ground, and that was to respond to the need for these crises. So our goal with this expansion would be increasing our bed size.
Wonderful. And Sasheen, how about you give us an overview of this big named concert fundraiser? I know I'm excited about who's performing. Can you talk about the concert fundraiser?
Yeah, so we are incredibly excited about this. So it's in partnership with the Ordine Foundation, which is absolutely fabulous. We will have Annie Humphrey, Keith Sekola, Eric Plaskin, and also a local drum group at it. It'll be like 2 hours just jam-packed of great music. So it's going to be on a Thursday night, April 6th, 7 p.m. Right now, we actually have tickets on sale with a discount, which is pretty cool. It was really important for us when we were coming up with this event that it's affordable. You know, this is a fundraiser, but we want to give something back also. And a way of that is having a fun night of music. We'll have some vendors of our sponsors on site, which will be exciting. You can see some of the resources that the Duluth community has. And like I said, part of it is like we want it to be affordable. And so right now, let's see, we have $10 off until the end of February using the code UNITY at checkout. And that would bring tickets down to $20. So then we'll have 20, 40, and $60 tickets. We really hope to sell out naturally. It'd be really stinking cool if we did, especially as this is, you know, our biggest fundraiser since COVID has happened, our biggest event in years. And to have these amazing artists, you know, use their voices too, as we bring awareness to domestic violence in the area, but fundraising for this great cause. It's really exciting that all proceeds are going to go right to the shelter expansion.
Fantastic. Well, as we round out our conversation here, is there anything you want to make sure to add before we say gigawabamin, Sasheen?
You guys do not want to miss out on this concert. So you can find tickets to buy tickets on the ACO website, so on the FunDV shelter, but you can also find them on North Shore Theater's website too, and we would love to see you there.
Awesome. Well, take care. See ya. Hi to everybody at ACO. Oh yeah. Good stuff there. Lots of good stuff. And I like that ACO has been able to move from being reactive to proactive. That's really cool. Really a good sign of building strength in our communities. And as we round out here, I just want to make sure to mention the Strong Hearts Native Helpline is a culturally specific helpline for Native Americans impacted by domestic, dating, and sexual violence. So if you or someone you know needs help, safety, or resources any time of day, 365 days a year, Strong Hearts Native Helpline is 844-7-NATIVE. That's 844-762-8483.
I'm Cole Primo.
And I'm Leah Lem. Miigwech for listening.
Gigawabamin.
Gigawabamin. Native Lights, Where Indigenous Voices Shine, is produced by Minnesota Native News and Ampers with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.
If you want to hear more Native folks talking about their gifts and finding their purpose, search for Native Lights, Where Indigenous Voices Shine, wherever you find podcasts, and find all of Minnesota Native News' content at minnesotanativenews.org.
The internet geeks at IP House are proud supporters of Fresh Air Community Radio. IP House provides internet hosting and access for your community, large or small. More information is available at iphouse.com.
Black history is Black future.
In the practice of Sankofa, we look to the past and learn from history, informing the present and making way towards new existences.
Join KFAI in celebrating Black presence, past, and future with 25 hours of all Black programming on February 25th, 2023.
Welcome to Kona Stories, a show by people of color, for people of color, and everyone else. I'm Halee Lee, owner of The Other Media Group, VP of Programming at Ampers, and Kona Stories producer.
I'm Don Eubanks, member of the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe Indians and associate of Dendros Group.
And I'm Cindy Morales-Garcia, co-founder of the Courageous Change Collective.
Thanks for joining us, Marsha. So our two other co-hosts, Anthony Galloway and Luz Maria Frias, cannot be here with us today. And so we hope them the best on what they're working on. And today we have a very special guest that will be joining us to have a very serious conversation. So can you introduce yourself?
Good morning, everyone. My name is Marsha Allen. I am a Hmong mom here on the east side of St. Paul. I am an activist and entrepreneur.
We have Marsha here today to talk with us about something I'm sure all of us have heard, maybe all of us have seen, or may not, or have chosen to not